The issue before us this afternoon is one that will be a referendum question on the ballot in many counties in Wisconsin, whether Wisconsin should have accepted increased Medicaid funding, which is one part of the complex Affordable Care Act. Governor Scott Walker decided not to accept the funding, while many other states did accept it. The issue was a key one in Friday night's gubernatorial debate, with Democratic challenger Mary Burke criticizing Walker for this decision, and Walker, of course, defending it. This afternoon, Mr. Kane will be arguing that Wisconsin should accept the federal funding, and Mr. McAdams will argue in favor of the status quo in this state of rejecting the money. So with that in mind, we'll begin with three introductory speeches, and I've decided to go with alphabetical order to start, and after that we'll take turns. Plus, we figure that Mr. Kane is going to talk about how we should change the status quo. So with that in mind, you get 3 minutes, Mr. Kane, to tell us what you think.
Well, afternoon, everyone. Thanks so much for coming out here today. I want to talk a little bit about the major issue that's obviously been coming up. Most of us have heard about it. It's the question of should the state of Wisconsin accept available federal funds for our state's Badger Care program. And if I had to describe the current debate in one word, I would have to say trapped. There are tens of thousands of citizens around the state, including here in Milwaukee County, that are find themselves in a situation that they did not create and are now victim to. 26,600 individuals are caught in what's referred to as a coverage gap, individuals who have been forced off of our state's Badger Care program, a statewide Medicaid-based program that we have taken a lot of pride in over the years. And unfortunately, these individuals are kicked off and unable to sign up for truly affordable coverage. They're stuck trying to make the best of a terrible situation that's outside of their control. What we could have done is we could have accepted available federal funds from the Affordable Care Act to fill in the gaps in the Badger Care program. We could have made sure that tens of thousands, 87,000 in fact, could have had access to affordable coverage, and the rest of us would have benefited from a world where health insurance is much more efficient. But that's not what we did. Instead, Wisconsin rejected federal dollars, unlike Republican and Democratic governors in many other states. Every state that touches our borders has taken the money, and we've also kicked thousands off. This is, again, as mentioned, going to be a major issue. The Marquette Law School poll last time showed, and it's going to come out again tomorrow, I understand, 61% of the state believes that we should take the federal funds. And this question, based on this intensity, this demand by citizens to make sure that the state takes these dollars, has put it as an advisory referendum question in 20 municipalities around the state, including Milwaukee County. So this very important public policy issue will be asked to you directly, which is why I'm so glad that Marquette, the nursing school, and the individuals up here allow us to have this conversation, because you will, at the voting booth, directly get the chance to decide on this critical, not only public policy, but a moral decision. Should the state of Wisconsin spend more money to cover less people, or should we allow... Should we accept available federal funds to make sure everyone has access to some form of affordable coverage?
Thank you. Mr. McAdams?
The so-called coverage gap, 26,000 people who don't have coverage, are not in a coverage gap. They're people who simply have not signed up for Obamacare and could sign up on the Obamacare website. They've gotten letters, et cetera, but they haven't done it yet. Hopefully they will before the time runs out. A large number of those, 14,000 is the number I have, actually have more in income. They were on Medicare, but they have an income greater than 138% of the federal poverty level, and therefore Obamacare assumes they're going to be in the exchanges, not on Medicaid. As for taking the federal money, I mean, everybody thinks, hey, free money, isn't that great? Hey, it comes from taxpayers all over the country, not just taxpayers in Wisconsin. You saw Mary Burke give an absurdly large estimate of how much extra Wisconsin has to spend. The Legislative Fiscal Bureau says that in currently the biennium we're in for 2 years, it's $206 million more that we will spend. That leaves out of account the fact that people in the Obamacare exchanges will get a very large subsidy. In fact, the subsidy in the Obamacare exchanges, which is money coming into Wisconsin, it doesn't go through the state budget, but it's money coming to Wisconsin, will probably average around $9,000 per person versus $6,000 per person, which Medicaid cost. Now, what are they? I find it ironic that people who are strong supporters of Obamacare think that it's absolutely terrible that these people are getting put in the Obamacare exchanges. What do they lose? They are likely to have to pay some premiums, but the premiums are massively subsidized. For example, for a family of four at 100% of the poverty level, the premium is $477 per year. That's not nothing, but it's less than $40 a month. What do they get? They get a better network. That is to say, about a third of physicians don't accept new Medicaid patients. And those are likely to be the better, more in-demand physicians. With private health insurance through the exchange, they get the better physicians. It's also the case that Medicare is parasitic on the system as a whole. It radically underpays providers, which, by the way, is the reason a lot of people don't take it, and that simply forces up prices for everyone. So on net, there's probably more money coming into Wisconsin under Walker's policies. It's just that it doesn't go through the state budget.
Okay, that's a lot of info there for people. I'm wondering if we could just step back and talk about, for starters, I should mention, okay, so we're now to the round of questions. They both made their introductory speech. From now on, at each question, they'll get 2.5 minutes to answer and 1 minute rebuttal. And I wanted to start out just by backing up a little bit and talking about the Affordable Care Act. So we'll start with you, Mr. McAdams, and the question is, do you favor or oppose the Affordable Care Act, and why, and how, in your view, would this increased federal funding affect how well the Affordable Care Act actually works in Wisconsin?
The extra funding would simply displace the Obamacare exchange for people up to 138% of the federal poverty level. I generally didn't like Obamacare. You can make a good case for a clean individual mandate, that is, forcing everyone to have insurance. And it's not because the evil capitalist insurance companies are exploiting people. It's because people who have above poverty incomes, remember, since the 60s, people with poverty incomes can be on Medicaid. It's people with higher incomes who exploit the system by not buying health insurance and expecting to get treatment anyway in the ER, if not before that. By the way, the CBO estimates that there will be 30 million people still uninsured with the full implication of Obamacare. The trouble with Obamacare, it's not just a clean individual mandate. It has layers and layers of social engineering on top. The contraceptive mandate was one egregious example. The tax on medical devices, because certain technocratic policy wonks think we use too much technology in the U.S., is another example. So I would have favored a clean individual mandate without layers of social engineering, but that's not what we got.
Okay. Mr. Kane?
I would say that I am a very strong supporter of the Affordable Care Act, and I found myself in a situation that many of you are going to find yourself in a few short months. Graduating from Marquette University, going into a labor force that is not exactly the strongest it's ever been in Milwaukee's history, and trying to survive in a world where health insurance is something that traditionally has been part of your employment. All right, you go off, you get a good job, you get access to some form of coverage through your employer. But for too many people, the economy is much more about temporary jobs or jobs without benefits or working for a much smaller employer that perhaps doesn't offer it. Small businesses in the state used to cover their employees twice as much 10 years ago than they do now. That's because small businesses have been dropping health insurance over and over again. And so if you are someone who's leaving this university, you might find yourself with a dilemma, at least before the Affordable Care Act. How do I find coverage that makes sure that no matter what my income is, no matter what my gender is, no matter what my pre-existing health care condition is, I can find some form of coverage that is affordable to me? That's what the Affordable Care Act was supposed to, or was designed to help do. To make sure that when you leave here, you may be able to find yourself being able to go back on your parents' health insurance, just like I did. You may find yourself being able to go for an employer that maybe gets a tax credit to be able to offer you health insurance. You may be able to find yourself getting a tax credit to go on healthcare.gov and find coverage that no matter if you make $12,000, $22,000, or $122,000 a year, you have some coverage that's affordable to you. Or you may find yourself like me, who, when I left Marquette University, found myself developing a condition that my insurance company later called pre-existing condition, said that they didn't want to cover me. I thought I was out of luck. Except now, insurance companies can never do that. I can never be charged more for my healthcare condition. I can never be denied or dropped from my coverage. And I can never be charged more simply by the basic health that in some point, or basic fact, that at some point in my history, I have been sick. I think most of us can empathize with that. The Affordable Care Act was designed to help improve a system that had been bureaucratic and not working. And I'm glad that it's as big as it is, because when healthcare is 18% of our economy, it better not be a short document. This matters a lot to a lot of people in all walks of life. And we better make sure that every single different facet of this law is there to make sure that people have some form of it. Is it the best thing ever? No, and I'm not going to argue it is. States can go above and beyond the Affordable Care Act, and many states are.
Where are we in time?
Oh, sorry. All right. So Wisconsin, the law just sets the floor. Wisconsin can go above and beyond, and that's the virtue of this law.
Okay. Sorry about that. So you know it's 2.5 minutes on the beginning, and then now it'll be 1 minute,
now,
okay. 1 minute rebuttal
sure. one
for each.
Okay. 2.5 minutes,
now 1 minute. Mr. McAdams, 1 minute rebuttal.
Yeah, it's interesting to see Kevin dissing the Barack Obama economy. He thinks it's great that he's on his parents' health care plan, as though that's somehow free. It's not free. His parents are having to pay only probably slightly higher, but still slightly higher premiums because of that. But then when he has to buy his own insurance, he's going to find out it's vastly more expensive. Why? Because Obamacare is designed to redistribute income from younger people who present less of a risk, who cost insurance companies less, to older people to hold down the premiums for older people. So when you folks get off of your parents' plan, you're going to face much, much higher premiums because of Obamacare. And talking about more affordable coverage, there's simply no evidence whatsoever that Obamacare is going to make coverage more affordable. It'll seem affordable to you if you're on your parents' plan because you're not paying anything for it, but that doesn't make it, on the whole, more affordable. So it sort of moves money around to placate certain constituencies, but no evidence whatsoever that it actually makes health care more affordable.
This is back compared to an old system that placated large insurance company constituencies who were big fans of covering younger, healthier male individuals. If you happen to not be healthy, not be male, or not be, you know, young through your entire life, then perhaps it wasn't necessarily the system for you. And I actually do buy health insurance. I do have private health insurance. I'm not on my parents anymore. So I've seen what the market's able to provide for. I see what when you actually have a regulated, actually competitive health marketplace where you can go and buy a plan no matter what your healthcare history is, there's a lot more transparency and accountability that we have never seen in this state. Because before the Affordable Care Act passed, I could not tell you how much your insurance plan would go up year to year, because it absolutely depended on your age, your gender, and your healthcare history. It might double for someone who is sick, and it might be exactly the same for someone who's healthy. But guess what? We all get sick or injured or older at some point in our life. And so this system is a much more efficient thing, because I'm going to bet that I'm not going to be 27 forever.
Okay. Next question. We'll start with Mr. Kane this time. Mr. McAdams has talked about the fact that by refusing the federal money in Wisconsin, people can simply get on the healthcare exchange, and so there's really no negative impact, if I'm understanding you correctly. But I guess my general question here, and I would want you to respond to some of what Mr. McAdams had to say about that, and I want you both to talk about, generally speaking, in your view, who will be better off under the Walker approach to affordable care and to not taking the money, and who's going to be worse off, and how many people will gain or lose coverage. Mr. Kane.
I would start with that the absolute winners in this scenario are predominantly the insurance companies and those individuals who are pushing for this as a political platform. If you are an individual who has been denied access to Badger Care, and by the way, I should mention that while it is true that you can get tax credits on the Affordable Care or healthcare.gov, the law was not designed for these individuals to have to. It's a perversion of policy that they find themselves in a scenario where they are forced to buy coverage that's really not made to be affordable for them. The out-of-pocket premiums are slightly more manageable, obviously, but deductibles and out-of-pocket costs aren't guaranteed affordable. All right, if you're making $12,000, having to spend a $500 deductible before you can even get care is a lot of money. And I should quickly mention that when we talk about the income groups affected, we're talking about the difference between, say, a single parent with one child making $7 an hour and $10 an hour. All right, this is not a group that has a large amount of income that they can dedicate to higher insurance plans. The hospital systems, the doctors, Aurora Healthcare, for example, all the different groups, the Nurses Association, have come out and said the state should have taken the money, and they still should. So we know that patients are not winning. We know that hospitals and doctors are not winning. The only group that is are the insurance companies, who find themselves earning roughly $4,500 per person in federal tax credits that they can get to make sure that these individuals can get them, but it's $4,500 extra dollars just in the tax credits that they would not have received had these individuals been covered by the much more affordable Medicaid.
The implication is they're getting $4,500 as a gift. No, they're getting $4,500, probably more than that, actually probably much more than that, to provide insurance coverage. And in fact, a provision under Obamacare that I think is kind of wacky, but you probably like, is that they have to pay out X percent, I think it's something like 90% in claims. Interestingly, because of that, there have been a huge number of waivers granted on that because it's entirely unrealistic for certain firms like McDonald's, which tend to have young employees that turn over very frequently. They're getting the money to provide insurance coverage. And what kind of bias is it to say, well, it's fine if the states gets the money and they provide insurance coverage, but we don't want those evil capitalists. We don't want those private sector people to get the money. People are better off in a competitive market. People are better off when they can choose. People are better off when they can choose different levels of coverage, which they can on the Obamacare exchanges, plans from different insurance companies. People are better off when they have a wider network of providers which they can use. In effect, imposing on people on and by the way, how much? What did you say? Someone earning $12,000? That's below the federal poverty level. They can be on Badger Care in Wisconsin. So that's a kind of a wacky number for a family of four. It's, if memory serves, $23,000-$24,000. So the $12,000 number's kind of wacky. People are simply better off with choices. People are better off with a good network. People are better off if they can choose.
Rebuttal?
So the federal poverty line for an individual is $11,541.
So you're talking about an individual, not a family.
Sure, it is higher for that, and thank God
okay,
for that.
Okay.
And as far as a greater network, the most available plans, the most affordable plans in Milwaukee County are narrow network, meaning that you really can only go to one, maybe two healthcare systems. And so individuals who are on Badger Care, Medicaid, in many cases have more options than people who are buying the five cheapest plans, which when you make that low of an income, those are the plans you're going to end up having to get. And so if you – those individuals denied are going to find themselves only going to a handful of places. And I agree that when you have choice, you have better options. But you have to have a real choice, not a choice that really constrains you.
I don't know anyone who actually claims that you have more choices under Badger Care than you have under private insurance. Under private insurance, it is true that some plans might be only one network, like or maybe Aurora and Columbia St. Mary's, but all the main networks in the Milwaukee area that includes Columbia, Aurora, Wheaton Franciscan Medical College have on their staff some very good doctors. So I don't. In fact, I thought everyone conceded that you have more choices if you are in the exchange and buying private insurance than you have on Medicaid. And the reason is straightforward: the reimbursement rates for Medicaid are way less than that for private insurance. Something in the neighborhood of 62% of private insurance. In other words, people who accept it are forced to take a 38% discount, and not everybody's willing to do that, particularly good doctors and doctors much in demand are not necessarily willing to do that.
Okay. Next question. Each speaker gets 2.5 minutes and then minute rebuttal. We'll start with Mr. McAdams this time. The Legislative Fiscal Bureau has estimated the state will lose $206 million by not accepting the federal funds for Medicaid expansion and would lose another $261 million in the next biennium for 2015 to 2017. In your view, how credible is Governor Walker's fear that the federal government will someday renege on its commitment to provide this funding, and how realistic that's the main reason that Governor Walker has given for not taking the money. How realistic do you think that fear is?
I think it's highly realistic. Look at how politicians act. Politicians enjoy imposing unfunded and underfunded mandates on people. They can take credit for it, and then somebody else has to pay. Sometimes it's interesting to look at the policy wonkish stuff from the CBO, the Congressional Budget Office. They recently, just a few months ago, talked about the federal deficit, and they said such high and rising debt would have serious negative consequences. Federal spending on interest payments would increase considerably when interest rates rose to more typical levels. Because of federal borrowing, eventually this would crowd out business investment, et cetera, et cetera. In other words, their assessment is that current levels of federal spending are unsustainable. So something is going to have to be cut. Frankly, a lot of things ought to be cut, and the big target is non-means tested contributory programs like Social Security and Medicare. But we see what happens there. You saw what happened when Paul Ryan suggested some extremely reasonable reforms of Medicare. The Democrats came out with an ad with him pushing grandma off the cliff. So the fact that something is going to have to be scaled back, I think, is unavoidable, that it is likely to be things like Medicaid, I think, is also very, very likely.
Mr. Kane?
The idea that the federal Medicaid funds for badger care are not going to be there is the same as arguing that Medicare is going to suddenly turn off one day. All right, it's an entitlement program. When you use it, it pays out. And for it to go away, we'd have to bank on the House voting to repeal it, the Senate voting to repeal it, and the President signing that repealing. And I don't think they can get any of that done in any of those cases. And so here's the thing. It's not a question of whether federal dollars are coming in. It's a question of how much federal dollars are coming in. And we have Dr. McAdams, though I did want to correct that, former professor of mine, not Mr. McAdams, has been arguing that the tax credits would be coming in, federal dollars would be coming in for there either. And so it's not a question of are we taking federal funds or not, because Wisconsin is. All right. For those individuals who are now on Medicaid for the first time, that's fantastic. The governor did, to be fair, add a number of people. They're still getting federal dollars, but much less. Wisconsin, in this scenario that was currently playing out, is getting 60 cents of every dollar we spend on badger care. In the scenario that's in front of us, we could be receiving 100% for the first couple of years and then 90 cents for every dollar thereafter. We could be making sure that those individuals are not only covered, but save the state a lot more money, thus the $206 million savings just this budget alone. And we shouldn't be afraid of federal funds in Wisconsin. 18% of our state's budget is made up of federal funds. Things for roads, schools, all the rest of that. And so this seems to be the one area where, and I guess trains too, but this and trains seem to be the one area where federal funds are not desired in the state, but everywhere else it seems to be okay.
It's not whether Medicaid is going to disappear. It's whether fiscal stress will lead to a reduction in the amount of Medicaid money paid to the state. If there is such a reduction, that will start squeezing the state. Again, that's what politicians like to do. They like to pose for holy pictures. They like to tell people, I'm giving you all these goodies. I'm giving you all these benefits. And then they find ways of sticking someone else with the bill. Where Medicaid is concerned, they now pick up 58% and change of the bill. Is that going to be reduced? I think there's a very real and legitimate fear that it will be.
In some respects, though, I mean, we're kind of arguing in a circular fashion. We've already said that covering somebody in the private marketplace costs $3,000 more than someone on Medicaid. And so if there is some way that the federal government wants to find itself saving more money, it's making sure people have access to Medicaid and not private insurance, which we've already established can take up to 20% off the top. For administrative costs, CEO bonuses, all the rest of that stuff.
No, it can't. Yeah. Not legally, not under Obamacare.
80%, 80-20 rule, the medical loss ratio is 80 cents of every dollar has to go to medical care, and the rest of it, or 85 for large group, has to be used for that purpose. But 15 to 20%, depending on the size of the plan, has to be used for medical care. And so we've already seen that the better use of federal dollars is on Medicaid.
And private insurance and government is perfectly efficient and doesn't have any administrative cost.
Are we having a separate round here?
Oh, go ahead.
Let's see here. Who are we start? Whose turn is it to start? Mr. Kane, right?
I think it might be mine.
I sort of lost track there. So what is the position of major healthcare stakeholders on the subject of the Medicaid expansion and the accepting the funds? Do the Wisconsin Medical Society and Wisconsin Hospital Association and other groups and experts have a public position? And how seriously should we take their views in forming our own opinions? We'll start with you, Mr. Kane.
So we've already seen that almost every single one of the major healthcare organizations, from the Wisconsin Hospital Association to the Wisconsin Medical Society, the Wisconsin Nurses Association, Aurora Healthcare, the Milwaukee Metro Area of Commerce, all these various organizations that make up these healthcare organizations, including the American College of Physicians, et cetera, have all said, take the money. They recognize that while there are slightly less reimbursements for this, it's a far more efficient system to make sure everyone has access to some form of available coverage. While there is some cost shifting, for example, in Medicaid, there's far more when people have to go to emergency rooms unable to pay for coverage because the private coverage they were never intended to have to buy is far too expensive for them.
Well, the assumption that Kevin's making is that some people are denied coverage under Walker's plan. They're not. They may fail to sign up in their Obamacare exchanges, although the numbers are pretty low. Not only is the number who haven't signed up that were on Medicaid down to 26,000, 14,000 of those are above the 138% level above which people are not supposed to be on Medicaid. They're supposed to be in the exchange. There's also a crowd-out effect. That is to say, some people substitute Medicaid for private insurance that maybe they could get at work, but they have to pay a little bit for it. Or maybe they could get it for a spouse, but if they can get it for free at the taxpayer's expense, they'll take it. One estimate from the Quarterly Journal of Economics said that you have to put about 1.4 people on Medicaid to have one more person insured, or conversely, if you take 1.4 people off of Medicaid, you have only one fewer people insured. But again, anybody that wants to can go to, and hopefully people will finally catch on. By the way, there's no guarantee. In fact, I know this is not true, that everyone eligible for Badger Care signed up for Badger Care. I know some people, unfortunately, who were eligible but didn't sign up because there was a modest sign-up fee. But as far as a coverage gap, as far as people not having insurance, yeah, they will have insurance either through the exchange or if they are 100% of the federal poverty level or below under Medicaid, just as they always have. Interestingly, Kevin invokes all these organizations, which he would generally, like the Commerce Association, label as evil exploiting capitalists, except when they happen to take a position that he likes.
I will agree that there are times that I will support certain organizations and be on opposite sides, be they hospitals or other, you know, other, you know, business organizations or labor groups or all the rest of that stuff. And in this case, we have, you're right, there would have been some people who didn't know about Badger Care. If the state took the federal money, they may not necessarily have signed up. But the way that they've made it much more efficient to access it, you go to healthcare.gov, it tells you what you can access. If you didn't know what you were eligible for, and you were eligible for Badger Care, it's now able to tell you. And that's never been easier than it is currently now. But overall, we've seen 26,000 individuals who have been unable, for the most part, to sign up for truly affordable coverage, who had been responsible and had gotten Badger Care the first time around, are now left on the sidelines. And that's going to play havoc with emergency rooms and other social service nets around the state.
They've been sent multiple letters by the Department of Health Services telling them to sign up. when we have people who don't do that, we have some interesting quandaries. For example, do we up the level of coercion? And there's a penalty for not signing up, but it's not very large. It's also the case that a lot of people know that if they should have an acute condition, health insurance will know. They can show up in the ER and they'll get treatment. I don't think you can blame Governor Walker that people are not choosing to sign up. And presumably people do catch on to these things, particularly when they get repeated letters, and presumably will eventually sign up. But remember, 14,000 of the 26,000 are above 138% of the poverty line and are expected under Obamacare to go on to the exchanges anyway, rather than receive Medicaid.
Thank you. There are somewhere in the neighborhood, I believe, 26 states and the District of Columbia that have accepted the federal money and in essence have embraced all facets of the Affordable Care Act. And so the logic behind this is that this all goes together. The increased Medicaid funding helps to make the Affordable Care Act work. So I guess my question for both of you, and we'll start with Mr. McAdams, is how well do you think the Affordable Care Act is working in the states that have embraced it?
You mean that have expanded Medicaid?
Yeah. Well, so there are states like California that very early on were jumping aboard to do health care exchanges and the like.
Well, I think it's worked like it's always worked, which is to say it has the advantage of being pretty much free. It has the disadvantage of very, very limited networks and no choice. And again, the disadvantage of bleeding the health care sector by underpaying for health services, which simply requires that health providers have to make up the difference somewhere else by charging other people more.
Which is a scenario that they're very, very familiar with, having done so for years with emergency room and uncompensated care. This is not a new phenomenon, this cost-shifting argument, and it's better, to get at least 70 cents on the dollar than no cents on the dollar. Overall, we're seeing healthcare reform working across the country, and obviously not nearly as well in states that are choosing not to implement it the way it's supposed to be implemented. I think there's no better comparison than Wisconsin versus Minnesota. For the last basically two decades, Minnesota and Wisconsin have been almost identical. Healthcare costs, demographics, population, average age, average gender, etc. And healthcare costs were the same until last year. Last year, they are now the cheapest in the country and we're above average. And the reason that is because their state decided to go above and beyond to do everything that they were supposed to do in implementing the Affordable Care Act. They've accepted federal funds, they've held insurance companies accountable, and they've made sure that more people have access to quality coverage. They created their own marketplace, for example, albeit, there's been a couple of technical glitches, but that's been true for everybody. But even in a state that's been doing this for a lot longer than everybody else, and by the way, I should mention that a plan in Minneapolis is about 50-60% cheaper than it is here in Milwaukee for the exact same plan. But Massachusetts has been doing this for far longer than everybody else, and in a state that has been doing, they called it Romney Care as a joke, but we're seeing a 98% coverage of their population. 99.5% of children are covered in Massachusetts. If that's not the closest thing to universal coverage, I don't know what is.
Well, the demographics of Milwaukee and, for example, Minneapolis, St. Paul is very different. There's nothing in Obamacare that really is going to hold down cost. To hold down cost, you have to resort to rationing, which hasn't happened yet, although there are plenty of voices that would like to see it happen. Again, we're talking about universal coverage. The CBO's estimate, the Congressional Budget Office's estimate, is that when Obamacare is fully implemented, there will still be 30 million people who aren't covered. That's nowhere close to universal care.
So the healthcare policy researchers who've looked at these questions before have determined the Dartmouth Atlas Project, Dartmouth College, looked and found that of all the healthcare spending in this country, I think we all accept that there's so much money in the system, it's a question of allocation, not putting necessarily more in. They found that 30%, 30 cents of every dollar, cannot be value added. It's effectively waste. And so it's a question of how do you reallocate existing programs? And there's quite a number of means in the Affordable Care Act for helping to control cost. I will admit that it's not gone far enough and that we need to figure out other Wisconsin-specific ways to have more or hold down costs, be it more transparency in the healthcare sector or other experiments like accountable care organizations, which are helping to make sure people have coverage for all throughout their life. But beyond that, we have the ability that consumer protection powers Wisconsin has never used. We have the ability to review rate increases by insurance companies and actually determine if they are excessive, if they are justified. And states have used this quite effectively to help hold down costs and actually help insurance companies leverage holding down costs with the hospital system, because it is a negotiation there as well.
I think Kevin needs to explain what in Obamacare actually has any effect of holding down costs. It's true that, for example, insurance companies can hold down costs by, for example, is this not my time?
I think this is rebuttal.
Rebuttal?
Is this? I thought it was math challenge.
They can hold down costs by, for example, refusing to cover procedures or radically limiting what they pay. That essentially comes to rationing. By the way,
but I don't particularly. We're saying that you're taking a second rebuttal.
Do I have a second rebuttal?
No. You already had one.
Oh, I didn't.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but you'll probably get another chance to say
okay.
That.
Okay.
You can probably work it out on the next one.
So
I wanted to switch gears here a little bit and just ask about, and let's see, on this one we'd be starting with Mr. Kane, right?
No, I think it's Dr. McAdams.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm really, let's see.
Yeah, that's right. Maybe not. I lost track, I'll be honest.
We did one of those things that you go.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, the last one was about the... how Affordable Care Act works in other states, and did I lead with you? I guess I did, huh?
I think so, yeah.
Okay. All right, so the next one we lead with, that's right, so the next one we lead with Mr. Kane. The question is, advisory referendums have been added to the ballot in cities and counties across the state on the question of whether to accept the additional federal Medicaid funds for Badger Care, including in Milwaukee County. Do you believe this was an appropriate action by local governments, and what, if any, impact do you believe these referendums will have?
I do believe it's an appropriate appropriate course of action. Here's the backstory about this. Last year, when the state was still determining about the question of Medicaid, counties around the state started passing resolutions to their elected officials, to the state, saying, look, this impacts us. All right, we are part of the safety net. We need to make sure these people have access to coverage. Those resolutions were ignored, not terribly surprisingly, unfortunately. And so they decided to take many of the county supervisors and all that, went to the county's association. It's the fourth largest lobbying group in the state. They decided to take it to the next level. And the county's association said, yes, we think this thing is important for our counties. We are going to encourage the state of Wisconsin to change its mind. And you started seeing Republican members of the Senate publicly saying, you're right, we need to change our mind. Senator Petrowski in Wausau, for example, was one of them. And so, you know, that didn't work, all right? That didn't work, and a number of counties and cities determined, you know what, they tried the normal channels. They tried making it clear that this truly impacted them. This is a vital issue that most of the healthcare organizations around the state have come out publicly and said, yes, the state needs to change its mind. So they took it up a notch, and they decided to allow the citizens of the state to vote directly on this public policy question. They wanted to take it out of the realm of partisanship. They wanted to make sure that no matter who you intended to vote for governor, you had the chance to decide whether the state should take the federal funds for Badger Care. And right now, 20 municipalities, 19 counties and one city, including Dane County, Rock County, Jefferson County, Milwaukee County, and the city of Kenosha, and plus a lot of rural blue and red counties farther up north, have put this directly to their citizens. And we've seen this issue used in referendum in places like Ohio to help convince the state to change its mind. And so legislators and citizens around the state have tried to give themselves the same opportunity. And so this is part of the reason why we're here, because you get the chance to weigh in on this. Is it going to be effective? Only time will tell. But it's going to help allow more people to understand this issue, so when this does come up in next year's budget, more citizens get the chance to tell their legislators how they really feel.
They have every right to put something on the ballot if they want to. How it will turn out will depend on how it's phrased. The supporters, of course, are going to ask, should we take $400 million a year in free federal money? And they'll, if it's put that way, they'll doubtless get a clear majority. If it's asked, should people above the poverty level have the option of buying their health insurance from and on a competitive marketplace with for poor people large subsidies, they would probably say they approve that too. It's always interesting that the people who don't like Scott Walker's policy will point out that, 26 states have taken the federal money, not mentioning the 23 that haven't. So is it sort of an everybody's doing it argument? Often the reason everybody's doing it is in a little town somewhere, you get a few citizens, maybe members of your organization, who go to the local board and, they'll say, sure, fine, we'll pass this resolution. It's not going to matter much because it is partisan, and as long as the Republicans control the legislature and the governor's office, Walker will stick with what he did. So that's why you're doubtless voting for Mary Burke. But in fact, it's not going to make any difference. You know, that's not to say you don't have any right to do it. You have a perfect right to do it if you want to.
So these 20 municipalities, roughly 47% of the state's population lives under these 20 municipalities. It's not quite half the state, but it's pretty darn close, okay? A lot of individuals will get the chance to vote directly on this, and I'd like to believe in a democracy that its citizens get what they want at least a handful of times, and that we all should get the chance to put our perspectives out there. And by the way, the vote to take the federal funds failed by one vote in the Senate, all right? There were 8 Republican senators who said publicly we should take the money, and only one voted that way. All right. Imagine if their counties told them they should change their mind. Maybe you can get that one vote to change its mind.
Okay.
One more rebuttal.
Sorry.
Yeah. An expression of public opinion is only valid if people are actually presented with the alternatives, right? Can I give you 15 seconds? Can you tell us how it's phrased on the ballot in these places?
Go ahead.
Okay. I yield 15 seconds.
Go ahead.
All right. It depends entirely on what county they're working with, because certain counties have put a little different on it. In Milwaukee County, it's shall the state of Wisconsin, so the next state legislature accept available federal funds for Badger Care.
Okay. In other words, it's, hey, should we take free money? It's sort of like Kevin mentioned trains. Should we take free money for a not-so-fast train to Madison or Mayor Barrett's trolley from nowhere to nowhere? It sounds good until you start asking, well, how much money are we going to have to spend out of our local tax money in order to handle what comes with the federal money? People will always favor free money if you just put it to them that way.
I'm going to ask one more question, and then we'll have audience questions. Governor Walker's talked about the fact that Wisconsin has gone a third way, their own way, in terms of how they've handled health care. And because of the tradition of Badger Care and just the way all that worked, that Wisconsin's approach is somewhat different than any other state. So I guess I wanted to ask both of you, is there, in each case, the system you object to, in your case, affordable care, and Kevin, in your case, the Walker approach, is there anything about their approach that you think is good and works? And I guess we're starting this time with you, John.
Okay. What's the question again?
Is there anything about the system you don't like, specifically affordable care, that you think is any good?
What do you mean? Obamacare?
Yes.
The layers of social engineering. Again, as I've explained before, a clean individual mandate you can make a very good justification for. But the layers of social engineering, for example, the hostility toward medical devices, that is a medical device tax, things like the contraceptive mandate, which assumes that women aren't capable of, one, either buying their own contraception or simply finding an employer who provides it, because most employers have no problem with it, and the power, increase in power of the federal government. Back when Obamacare was being debated, one of the insurance companies sent out a notice to its members saying, you want to oppose Obamacare because it'll have these bad consequences. Kathleen Sebelius sent that insurance company a letter saying, if you do something like that again, we're going to exclude you from the exchanges. In other words, she said, if you exercise your free speech, we're going to punish you with the power we have. So I think that gives the federal bureaucrats too much discretionary power, power they can use to do things like forcing people into, they don't call them HMOs anymore, but something like an HMO, power to ration care. They say they're not going to ration care, but how do we know? I mean, they have an independent payment review board that could do that. The trouble is it's way much too much power in the hands of federal bureaucrats, way too much social engineering, going way beyond something that would be reasonable, which is, quite simply, a clean individual mandate.
All right. So I guess your answer would be there's nothing about affordable care you like.
Except an individual mandate.
Okay.
Which is, by the way, not going to be enforced very well because the penalty for not signing up is small.
Okay, and Mr. Kane, then the question for you is there anything about Walker's approach to health care that you think is good and works?
And then I get to rebut his position?
Yeah, it's your 2.5 minutes.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant for the follow-up rebuttal. I'll be honest. Wisconsin did take a somewhat different path than other states did. And let's not kid ourselves that when they had the chance to add thousands of individuals to Medicaid, they did do this for a select few, and that's great. I'm glad they didn't have to do that. Other states have not only rejected federal funds and cut their eligibilities, but they've made it so people truly cannot access either tax credits or anything else. States, you know, like Florida and Texas and all that. Not terribly happy that we're stuck in that number too. But you're right, there are still 23 states that have rejected the federal funds, but that keeps lowering. It used to be 26 and then 25 and so on and so forth. The states changed their mind and realized that it was a good idea. And so, yes, Wisconsin did cover people that they hypothetically didn't need to. And we should celebrate that. But we're still paying more money to cover fewer people. And that's why we're here. That's why we're trying to make sure this is happening. And I just quickly like to say, I guess now that employers are the ones who decide about the contraception piece, is it going to say in your employee benefits, you know, dental, vision, medical, contraception? Is that going to be in there?
Well, any employer has a list of stuff that's covered and not covered. Marquette does.
But do they tell you when you apply?
They do if you ask for it.
Oh, okay.
And they certainly would answer any question about what they supply and what they don't supply.
So if you'd like it, you have to ask your employer.
What's that?
If you would like it, members of the audience, contraception, you'll have to ask your prospective employers.
Why not? You ask about any other kind of health care coverage that you want, and you're wondering whether it's covered or not. I mean, are you assuming employees are stupid, that they don't know to even look at that or ask about that? Except where were we?
you were sort of in your rebuttal.
I know, but let's see. What was your point?
That it does cover some people in Medicaid, but not nearly the many.
Childless adults. Doyle instituted a policy of allowing childless adults to be covered by up to 200% of the federal poverty level, then immediately had to stop enrollment because the state didn't have the money to pay for it. Walker did allocate more money to that and did do away with the terribly long waiting list that was there.
So I want to rebut the part about the Affordable Care Act because I'm on my rebuttal part right now.
Yes.
So let's be clear. The sky hasn't fallen. This generation, I hope to include myself in this, has been hearing for a long part of our adult lives about how this is going to destroy our society as we know it. All right, we've heard that there's death panels, it's going to destroy jobs, insurance is going to skyrocket, health insurance is not going to cover our people. It should be kind of apparent to us that none of that has happened. All right? Yes, it's not a perfect system. No man-made thing is going to be perfect. We can seek to improve it. But this is something that is far and away better than a world we used to live in, where you could be discriminated or charged more based on the pre-existing health condition or whether you happen to be born female. And that's not a world I want to go back to.
Interestingly, you can be discriminated against if you're born male if you're a teenager and want to get auto insurance. Somehow that's okay, but charging women who have higher risk of needing a delivery, which is fairly expensive, is considered bad. I think we need a single standard about that. It's true the sky hasn't fallen. It's also true that it's difficult to see how it's made anything better. Most of us, like those of us who work for Marquette University, have the same health care plan we did before. We got nicked a little bit because Marquette had to cut back had to increase our out-of-pocket and deductibles to avoid paying a federal tax because we had a so-called Cadillac plan. That's another little bit of social engineering. That is to say, we don't like your plan because it's too generous, so we're going to tax it. Again, that's one of the many layers of social engineering piled onto Obamacare. Sky hasn't fallen. On the other hand, very difficult to see how it's made anything really better.
Am I right that was the second rebuttal? Okay, so Kevin, you get one more if you want it.
We can move on to another question. That's
okay,
fine.
Well then, in that case, I think we'll open it up to the audience for questions. We have two smart people here who know a lot about this subject. Do you have some questions for our panel? Yes.
So I'm going to present a little bit of a scenario. This is probably more directed towards Mr. Kane. So some of the people that I work with attend the 16th Street Health Clinic. And usually, before Obamacare, they didn't have insurance. And so because of allocations and everything, the hospital's more reimbursed for the care that they provided, knowing that these people didn't have insurance. So Obamacare comes around, and a lot of these people sign up for plans. Sure. They sign up for more of the bronze plans, the cheapest ones that they can get. And it turns out that the clinics and the hospitals that are in their area that they would attend, like the 16th Street Health Clinic, are not a part of their plan. It's not covered in the bronze plan. But that's still the place that's closest to them.
Mm-hmm.
That's the place that they're going to go if they have an emergency, if they have anything going on. And to me, that doesn't make any sense. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on this situation, because this is a very practical example.
Right.
That is shaking out as a result of the Affordable Care Act.
So that's a great question. There's sort of two different pieces in there. There's the question of narrow network plans, and this is something that if you live in Madison or other areas, you're going to see this. You've seen this for a while, but Wisconsin, we're so used to being able to go to whatever, or Milwaukee, we're so used to being able to go to whatever plan we want to go to. 16th Street is a perfect example, all right, of the issue that I brought up earlier about Medicaid and narrow network plans. If those individuals had been covered in Badger Care, which again is a Medicaid program, they very likely would have been able to continue going to their community health center, which is why the Wisconsin Primary Health Care Association, the organization of community health centers, was part of the group that advocated for taking the money. But because the cheapest or most available plans to people in those areas are narrow network, which means they pretty much can only go to Aurora without being considered out of network and paying a lot more, they now can't. But those individuals, had they been covered in Badger Care, the way they were supposed to, as outlined in the Affordable Care Act, would still have that level of care in their neighborhood. But now they're forced to go to one system versus another. And it didn't have to be that way.
There's nothing in Obamacare that Medicaid in general has much narrower networks than private insurance companies. Now, maybe it's a matter of scale and you guys just aren't big enough to, maybe you need to be talking to insurance companies. If you're providing health care in a cost-effective way, they have every incentive to sign you up. I mean, they have every incentive to do that. Maybe it's simply a matter of scale. You don't have the right people talking to the insurance company saying, add me to the network.
Yeah, and what's another wrinkle about this, the way it's shaking out, is because previously where we would be able to provide care,
right,
through the reimbursement and stuff, we're no longer getting that reimbursement because now it's under the assumption that everyone has insurance and we should be getting reimbursed that way. So that's...
Okay.
Think about turning off the lights a little more.
You mean you were getting reimbursed for people who were getting care, you provided care, but they didn't have insurance.
Mm-hmm.
Another question?
There seems to be some disagreement between whether or not this gap exists of people who cannot get coverage. You know, Professor McAdams, you say these people can sign up. And Mr. King, you say this is not affordable. I was wondering if one of you could provide me with a scenario, a sort of a typical maybe family situation or an income situation where someone would technically be, you know, supposed to be in the exchanges, and how much would that cost them and what would their deductible be? And I know it would just be an example, but
true.
I'm trying to get a sense of what this gap really needs.
Well, the gap is people who've gotten multiple letters from the Department of Health Services in the state and told they should be on the Obamacare website and sign up, and they don't. But I didn't necessarily hear the rest of your question clearly.
I would like to know sort of a sample income for, I don't know how many, like two people or three people, and then what kind of things would someone with that income have to pay on the exchange?
I can take that.
Well, if
to straight answer the question, just the numbers.
Sure.
Piece.
Oh, you want an example of what the kind of premium would be? Okay.
Someone just over.
How big a family?
I don't know.
Okay, three. Did you say three?
Yeah.
Okay, a family of three at 100% of the poverty level, it would be $396 per year. What would family of three be? 17, 8? Well, no, it'd be 18, 19,000?
I'm blanking on the family of three, but for an individual, let's go with individual. Let's start
with family of three, 17, 8, well, high teens, well maybe 20.
Okay, so we'll even say 20. Let's be generous, because I think it's probably less than that. Mm-hmm. So you're saying it would be about $400 a month?
No, per year.
Per year.
That's per year.
Deductible for that?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, there can be deductibles and coinsurance, yeah.
They may find themselves paying as much as 500, maybe 1,000 for silver or bronze plan, depending on what it is they're purchasing.
500 or 1,000 over what period?
For the year. I mean, and that's provided they are right at the poverty line. If they are above that, the tax credits for out-of-pocket expenses can be much higher. The average tax credit, or excuse me, the average deductible for a silver plan is roughly $2,000, maybe $2,500 for an individual, and could be as much as like $5,000 for a bronze plan, for example.
Well,
this is before the tax credits that come in. They do mitigate it a bunch, but when they tell the story that the individuals denied BadgerCare have more reasonable premiums, we're not telling the whole story. We're missing the deductibles, the co-insurance, and the co-pays.
Okay. The a household of three people at 123% of the poverty level would pay for a silver plan 60. This is 123% of the poverty level. Household of three, 67. No, hold it. No, they would pay. They would get a tax credit. That would, before credit, it would be $6,700 a year. But what they would end up paying is $480 a year. Now it is true they might have to pay some coinsurance and deductible, although I think what Kevin is giving you is kind of a worst-case scenario.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's the cheapest plan.
Well, the cheapest is bronze. What I just gave you is silver.
Well, not after the tax credits, because there's... Well, I know, but there's no... Yeah, there's no out-of-pocket deductible for bronze plans, only silver.
No out-of-pocket deductible?
Also, there isn't.
For bronze
plans? I mean, there's no out-of-pocket tax credit. No out-of-pocket, like to reduce the size of the deductible. There's none in bronze plans, only silver.
Okay. And the numbers I just gave you are for silver.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Yes?
I have a question for Dr. McAdam. You stated that one of the reasons that Medicaid can be a disadvantage to people is narrow networks, as you were discussing. The Walker administration has mandated HMO enrollment for all BadgerCare enrollees, and there are 8 HMOs in the Milwaukee area, several of which also offer plans on the private market, healthcare and Anthem, and several more will be offering next year. And I was hoping you might be able to comment on why you feel those are narrower networks, even though they're provided by the same insurance companies that you were saying offer broader networks on the
Well, HMOs meant different things. It once meant doctors were on salary, and there were a bunch of doctors in a building, and you had to go to those doctors. My understanding, although I haven't been on an HMO for a long time, Marquette used to offer Milwaukee Medical Clinic, which is now owned by Roars and up on Good Hope as an HMO. And my wife and I had a hard time getting the referrals we needed, so we paid $100 plus a month to get out of that. My understanding is now it simply means you can't get an appointment with a specialist unless your primary care doctor says you can have it. And my understanding, and I could be wrong about this, is that primary care doctors are under a bit of pressure not to give too many referrals. So it is better to be under a plan that's not HMO. Now, does that mean I think HMO should be outlawed? Absolutely not. I think HMOs or what's the concept? Medical home, which is now similar, now a fashionable concept, should have to compete in the marketplace. That is to say, if people feel that the cost saving is justified and they get reasonable care, they should be free to choose it. Clearly, if it's taxpayer money, all right, the taxpayers have a right to say, you know, we're not going to provide anything more than what we think is adequate care, which is a well-qualified primary care doctor and referrals the primary care doctor thinks are necessary. But HMOs clearly are more restricted than, like, the plan I have, which is Marquette's plan, where I can call up a specialist and just, you know, ask for an appointment.
Did you have anything to say on that?
I think, simply put, when if you're put between a series of choices that you can't really afford, that's not a real choice. And that if we really want to improve the freedom and opportunity of individuals who are at the edge of the poverty line to really go off, live their life, have money in their pockets and spend in the local community, we want to make sure that affordable coverage is available to them. And when Tommy Thompson created Badger Care, the anecdotal story that comes out is he asked the insurance companies, what do you think about that? And they said, well, we don't care. We don't cover them anyway. And that he created it under the idea that people, if you didn't have access to affordable coverage, you could not get out of poverty. It was part of the welfare reform pieces back in the 90s. And that we needed to make sure people had access to coverage so they could work to get themselves out of it. That's the argument that was originally behind Badger Care. And now we're kind of twisting that on its head and saying that somehow people who are at that income limit shouldn't have access to it because they're poor. But that's why we created it, is to really give people the means to be able to live their lives.
Yeah. If you're above 100% of the poverty level, you can go into the Obamacare exchanges. And again, it's interesting to see, like Kevin was dissing the Barack Obama economy a few minutes ago. Now he's dissing Obamacare, saying someone getting thrown into the Obamacare exchange is terrible.
Any other questions? Yes.
My question is for Dr. McAdams. You were just saying that you thought an advantage of the private insurance was being able to just go to a specialist. Is that what you were saying? And not having to wait for a referral from your doctor?
The plan I have at Marquette, yeah, I can just call up a specialist if I want to. Usually I'd ask my doctor to recommend a good specialist anyway, but yeah.
The argument that a lot of the reason that we have such high health care costs in America is because of that, is because we have so many specialists, and that we have too easy access to specialists, and that we should have more gatekeepers than we should actually
have. That's an attractive argument if you're thinking about other people going to specialist. It's not a very attractive argument if you're thinking about your going to specialist. I'm old enough and have enough healthcare problems. I have doctors out the ears, and they're very good. They're very good specialists, and I rather like having access to them. I think I need them. Between HMOs that limit access to specialists and those that don't, I think there should be a competitive market that people should be allowed to decide, oh, if I'm in this HMO and pay less, but I feel the health care is perfectly adequate, that's fine. I'll take the money. If, on the other hand, if you're in the situation I and my wife were, where we thought the health care was inadequate and we could pay Marquette $150 more per month for a wide network. The Marquette's network is all the best doctors in the whole Milwaukee area. Okay, I was willing to pay that. I think that's the way the decision should be made, not by technocrats deciding we have too many specialists, not by people deciding that, no, we need more specialists, but by people facing the true cost and the true benefits of the choices they make. And again, one thing that worries me a bit about Obamacare is it gives too much power to technocrats. Some of you might want to Google up Ezekiel Emanuel and his notion, his whole life notion of who should get health care and who shouldn't. You'll see how technocrats think.
Mr. Kane, do you have something to say on this?
So I think you're absolutely right that there's a question of how do we reestablish the healthcare system to make sure that it's more efficient. And part of the reason is, or part of the solution is helping to make sure people have access to truly preventive services. And we all know that the vast majority of healthcare costs in this country are from a very small, very sick population. You want to figure out one of the ways that we help address the cost of healthcare, one of the pieces in the Affordable Care Act, you help make sure those people don't get very sick. All right, you emphasize prevention, and it's actually one of these social engineer, quote-unquote, social engineering pieces that were brought up earlier, this idea that you now have the ability to go get preventive services with no out-of-pocket and no premium, no out-of-pocket, no deductible costs. If you want to be healthy, go see your healthcare provider, because the returns to that, not just for you, not just for the insurance company, but for the economy as a whole, of us being healthier for the long term, are much more than the cost it would be just for the be able to go to a doctor's office. And so we need to help control the cost, the growth of costs for the future, but make sure people have the opportunity to go get that coverage without wondering how they're going to scrape together a copay.
I think we might have time for one more question, if we have one, although we might have to limit the response to 1 minute each for them. Anyone else with a question? Well, in that case, do you want to give 1 minute summary here, each of you?
Sure. You want to go first?
Sure. This November, November 4th, you're going to get asked a very vital question that's going to be on the bottom of your ballot. Should the state of Wisconsin accept available federal funds to cover people in Badger Care? I urge you to vote yes, and I urge you to tell your friends and your family to vote yes, too, because this is a vital public policy issue that no matter what happens after November 4th is over, is going to continue to be thrust upon our state to be able to decide. Do we spend more money to cover fewer people, or do we use every tool available in the Affordable Care Act to make sure our state does better than other states? Our state makes sure that our healthcare system is affordable and efficient. If we make sure that the people who need coverage can get coverage, and we all benefit from it, because this is an interconnected system. And I very much encourage you to vote yes in the referendum, because the state needs to change its mind and take the money, and this is one major way that we can tell them.
If you think people with low incomes being put in the Obamacare exchanges is just a terrible idea, terribly oppressive, that having choices, being able to get a wider network, being able to choose different kinds and different levels of healthcare plans is a terrible thing, then, you know, go vote for Mary Burke, which, by the way, would mean more than voting on any of these referenda. If you think that a choice, that competitive markets, that people being able to buy the kind of healthcare coverage that they want with, for poorer people, a very, very large taxpayer subsidy, because, of course, they couldn't afford the unsubsidized insurance policy. Those things are terribly expensive. Then support Scott Walker's reforms, or at least stand down, because you really don't have any good reason to go the other way. In terms of money, remember, the amount of the money, figures you hear about where we're passing up all this federal money is completely ignoring the Obamacare subsidies. It's money coming into the state, too. You're supposed to somehow look at money run through the state treasury and ignore the fact that the Obamacare subsidies go to individuals to allow them to buy affordable health care.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. Can we have a round of applause for our two speakers?